Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Big game on Centre Court as we speak. Scoop will have the update of the Sinner and Tsitsipas match. But as expected last night by the good judges, Scoop, Ash Barty sauntered her way into the semi-finals without breaking into a gallop against Jessie Pegula. It was a walk in the park, and looking at who's left in the draw, it's hard to see Barty dropping a set. In fact, right now, with the exception of Osaka, young Anna Samova and Coco Gauff, who look to be young talents on the march, but both went out early, it's hard to see where the wave of competitors for Barty is going to come from. Barty has taken her game to an extraordinary level over the last 24 months. Total mastery of all shots. Can beat you in many, many ways. Got great shots, but also great tactics and understanding of the game. While at the same time, the depth of talent, just from my eyes, appears to be at the top of the tree, its weakest for a long time. So what we've seen, Scoop, only Osaka and Barty herself can beat Ash Barty for mine in 2022. And I'm not talking about just the Australian Open. Maybe we should be talking about the true Grand Slam. Welcome to you, Scoop.
Hello, Jared. A couple of things to take out from that.
Yeah.
Last one first. The real Grand Slam. You think Ash could win all four?
She hasn't even won the Open yet. She's so far and away, with the exception of Osaka, the best player in the world right now, that something's going to have to go awfully wrong for her not to do it.
Jared, watching up close last night,
yeah,
she's on a different planet.
She is.
And she's not hitting the ball hard.
No,
she's just a finesse.
Big congratulations before we go on, Scoop, to Dylan Alcott.
Yes.
We know Dylan well, known him for a long, long time. What a magnificent contribution he's made to Australia, and today recognised as the Australian of the Year. So congratulations, Dylan. I know you're good mates with him, Scoop.
Yeah.
He's going to be terrific.
What you see is what you get with Dylan, Jared, and how special it must be for a group of people in Australia that have been marginalised for so long, people with disabilities, to be commemorated and celebrated in such a way. He'll be the most proud of that, I would think.
Shortly we're going to go over to Greece, which is snowed under, and chat to Vicky Georgiatou.
It's 3 degrees in Athens right now.
I believe it's...
Didn't we talk to Vicky last year when Stefanos was playing in a semi-final?
Yeah, she's blogging right now and everybody's snowed under, so she'd be pretty well entertaining the masses because everybody's at home. But just to give some context to my comments regarding the depth of the talent.
Yeah.
The top 10 right now in 2022, Barty, Sabalenka, Muguruza,
Krejcikova,
Pliskova, Badoza, Konteva, Sakkari, Swiatek, who won today, and Jabeur.
Polish.
Go back 20 years.
Serena,
Venus, Jennifer Capriati, Kim Clijsters, Justine Enner.
Yep.
Emily Maresmo, Monica Seles, Daniela Hunter-Kova, Yelena Dokic, and Martina Hingis.
What about some of those names? You've got Hingis at 10.
Household names. And, you know, that's without going into the next 4 or 5, which are pretty good as well. 2012, just 10 years ago, Serena Williams, Caroline Wozniacki, Kim Clijsters, Aussie Kim, Yelena Dementieva, one of the great athletes, Maria Sharapova, Yelena Yankovic, Sam Stosur, Venus Williams, Vonareva, and Schiavone, who won the French Open, Scoop.
Wow.
That's why I reckon there is such an opportunity for this to be the great era. And you discussed it a few days ago. That puts context to the fact that 2 or 3 years down the track, maybe Ash Barty will have half a dozen slams.
Let's go to Vicky Georgiatou, I think is how they pronounce it over in Athens, where it is quite cold, and Vicky's keeping a close eye on Stefanos Tsitsipas. Welcome again to Sports Day, Vicky.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Can we get our first round the grounds from Athens, Vicky? Can you give us the current score, please?
The score?
Yes, please.
Of the match, you mean?
Yes, indeed.
It's 6-3, 5-4. And now he's serving in, let's see. It's 40-30.
Yeah.
Okay, he got the second set as well.
Okay.
So two sets to love up against Yannick Sinner.
Yeah.
Jared?
6-3, 6-4.
You are part of history on Sports Day, Vicky. That is the first time we've had an around the grounds.
From Athens. Is the heating working overtime? How many coats have we got on? For those who don't know, there's been another snowstorm hit Athens. We've got power outages, the train lines are down, internet's down. What's the lay of the land there, Vicky?
Things are a bit better today. I'm wearing two coats right now, so I'm feeling better.
Yeah.
It's not snowing, but still there are many problems. A lot of areas don't have electricity. Mm. We're not prepared for this kind of weather. I think you know that.
Mm, we absolutely know it. My old mate Johnny from Tommy Ruffs, he tells me it never snows in Greece, but...
some of the photos, Jared.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
But actually, it snowed last year as well during the Australian Open.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Your mate or your countryman, Stefanos. Mm-hmm. He looked to be in serious trouble a couple of nights ago against Taylor Fritz. What were you blogging about then?
Yeah, I was kind of worried during that match. But I think he showed his mental strength.
Yeah.
After losing the third set. And today I'm quite impressed by his performance because he hasn't played his best tennis till today. But today, I don't know if you've seen any, have you seen any highlights?
Yeah.
But he's really, really good. It's a very impressive performance till now.
Yeah, I was a bit concerned he might have been struggling a little bit following that five setter. But given he had a limited preparation, he has come to Australia and this one might be the one. This is the one that he might just crack open his Grand Slam count.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, he, I don't know if you know, but he had a surgery
late November.
So it's almost 2 months since then. And he doesn't seem to be affected. I mean, his elbow seems fine. And I think he can go far this time. Although, you know, the, if he makes it to the semi, he could meet Medvedev, and you know, against him, his head-to-head is not very good. But let's see.
What is it? I was just going to ask you about Medvedev. What is it about his game that Medvedev seems to work out quite quickly? Do you think?
I don't know. There are some matchups that don't help some players. I think that matchup doesn't help Stefanos at all. But I think it's also a mental thing because it also, I don't know if you remember, they had a fight during their first meeting. And since then, I think that that Medvedev has got in his head, you know. And he's so nervous. He really wants to beat him each time. So sometimes he doesn't make the right choices. But also, you know, Medvedev is a very good player. He doesn't give you many chances, and he doesn't suit Stefanos' game at all, I think.
Stefanos is one of the players being followed by cameras everywhere for a Netflix documentary.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to find out about him that we didn't know?
I'm not sure because he's always a guy that expresses himself. So I don't know if we'll see something much different from what we see now. But I'm really, it will be interesting. So I'm waiting for that. I'm anxious to see that as well, you know, to see. I'm excited, I must say. And also the other Greek player, Sakaris, has also signed with Netflix. So we will see both the Greek players in the series, the documentaries.
And how many more papers do you sell when Stefanos is in the second week of a slam?
I work for a website, but, you know, I see that many people start following. If he makes it to the second week, always there are more people interested, you know. For example, today we have a live blog on the website and it's full of people, you know, following him. So you can see the difference if he makes it to the second week of Grand Slam. And the papers, then the national newspapers, they have them on the first page every day now. So yeah, it's quite different.
What's your blog called, Vicky, in case people here in Australia want to?
It's a live blog during the match. So
yeah.
It's in Greek, so it will be tough for Australians to follow.
Yeah, well, that's probably true.
Can I ask you, Vicky, about Jared? You were reading out the top tens before, and we've got Maria Sakkari, who is, I think, seated at five. She's no longer in the tournament. But correct me if I'm wrong, Vicky, I think she was voted Greek Woman of the Year.
Yes, exactly.
So how big is she there? Like, if she gets on a roll in a few slams, does she have the ability to have a similar following to a Tsitsipas?
Look, it's different because men's tennis is more popular in Greece, you know, like I think in most of the countries. but I think she's more likable than Stefanos here in Greece. Stefanos has more haters, I must say, than Maria. They like her more.
Why is that?
I don't know exactly, but probably there are some tweets that came from Stefanos and people didn't like them during the pandemic and some other things. And I don't know, they don't, they seem to feel that he's arrogant, although that's not true. He's not arrogant at all because I know him, you know.
Yep.
And I think they like Maria more.
Okay. Tell us about the antics of our friend, our mate and player here. Kyrgios is getting slammed by a couple of the players. How is that being received over there in Greece?
About Kyrgios?
We like Kyrgios. Okay. It's interesting because a couple of players are all of a sudden starting to call out his antics on the doubles court.
Look, Kyrgios, they consider him a Greek here in Greece, although, you know, he's not exactly Greek, but I think that people here like him sometimes. I mean, when he doesn't cross the line, they think that he gives something different, you know, to the sport. Certainly, so I think they like him.
Certainly turning it on in the doubles arena right now.
Yeah.
Vicky, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Stay warm.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Vicky Yuriatou, our local correspondent over there in Athens. He's pretty big, Stefanos. Pretty big. He's two sets to love up.
He's still got that one.
Just started the third set.
Do you think Sinner would have taken a set or will take a set?
I did think he would take a set, given the form that we saw him obliterate Alex de Minaur in.
Yep.
But as you get towards the top five, Jared, as we know, they become different levels, don't they?
Well, he's going to get there, I think, eventually. But right now, he looks just a half pace off.
More sports day after this.
So a lot of messages from other people saying how embarrassed they were with the crowd's behaviour and they're sorry and it shouldn't have been like that. So, you know, there'll always be his supporters and he'll always spin it in a way that helps him. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's just an absolute knob. I mean, I think it just speaks for him. His maturity level is about, it's probably being generous to a 10-year-old to say that it's about at that level. He's unbelievable tennis player. What he does on the tennis court, what he can do out there, his tennis IQ on the court, it is amazing. And he's definitely on that side of things, one of the best players in the world. But from the maturity side of things, you see why he's never fulfilled his potential and probably never will.
Welcome back to Sports Day. That is Michael Venus.
Going bang with a backhander.
The one of the doubles partners that lost it. Kyrgios and Kokkinakis yesterday, absolutely teeing off. Maturity of a 10-year-old to be kind.
There's actually been a little bit more...
had a crack at the crowd?
A few people have been going hard in their press conferences. But
Dennis Shapovalov.
Shapovalov went hard on Rafa.
Basically accused
Rafa
Nadal and tennis authorities of being corrupt for not calling him. In fact, let's listen to Dennis.
It's unfair, you know, how much Rafa's getting away with. I mean, I'm completely ready to play, and the clock is ticking. 3, 2, 1, you know, it's clicking towards zero. And I'm looking at the ump, and you know, I'm going to speak up and say something. I mean, I've been ready to play for a minute and a half. And he tells me that he's not going to give him a code violation because I'm not ready to play, you know. And to me, it's just a big joke, you know, if somebody says that.
What'd you make of that, Jared?
I thought he had a fair point, to be honest.
Imagine an AFL coach coming out and saying, look, I think the umpires are corrupt.
Yeah.
I think that they umpire Hawthorne differently. And I think that Alistair Clarkson has them all around their little finger.
Yeah, I think
be a $25,000 fine the next day.
Please explain. Certainly would come. And
it is amazing.
I thought he had a fair point. I mean, I was watching the clock, and I thought it had a fair point. I think that it'd be good to see the clocks on the screen.
I think on
the TV screen
because you do get them there at the stadium.
Yeah, I know that, and you get the serve velocity
at the stadium
screen as well. But you'd love to see that up on the screen so you can watch every serve. At least I would, anyway.
Yeah, well, I guess for the ones with with better.
Just digressing a little bit.
Yeah, you can see it in the
yeah,
right hand.
Yeah, you can occasionally
screen,
in the
but
corner.
You have to
yeah.
squint a little bit. I agree. They should bring it up like a cricket bowling a cricket ball.
Just have it in part of the graphic.
Yeah. Do you think you'll get fined for that, Michael Venus?
Oh, you should.
You should.
Yeah.
He?
No, you can't go corrupt.
Oh no, so that's Denis Shapovalov.
Oh, sorry. No, well, he should get.
Should Venus be fined for calling another player a knob?
No, he's not going to get fined for that.
Okay.
But certainly the first guy going with corrupt is not good. Can I ask you, Scoop, what the policy is for wearing masks at the tournament? Because last night, Gail Monfils's group in the box, they just didn't have a mask. So if they're entitled to, if everyone's being told to put a mask on, I'm not sure where they are. At Tennis Australia or the whoever's responsible for the stadia, you either have a mask on or a mask off policy. You can't have one or the other. Just take your choice. And you can't go fining kids in schools for not wearing a mask. And yet we've got these high profile people, which all the kids are watching, sitting in a coach's box, not wearing a mask. What is the rule, Scoop?
Is that rant over?
It is.
Okay, we'll go to Tony Tardio with his headlines.
Good evening. Melbourne has had its hottest Australia day in 16 years. The mercury at Olympic Park reached 36 degrees at about 4:30 this afternoon, while Viewbank in the city's north hit 38.1. Victoria has had its deadliest day since the horror second wave of the pandemic. 35 more Victorians, aged from their 40s to their 90s, have died with COVID. COVID testing commander Jerome Wymar says it's a sobering reminder the pandemic is not over. 29 people have died in New South Wales. Whiskey and spirit drinkers are about to be slugged with higher taxes after the tax office announced an increase in tax on spirits from $88.91 per litre to $90.78 from next month. And crowd capacity is being boosted to 65% for the remainder of the Australian Tennis Open. The previous cap was 50%. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
You know, Nadal's a hell of a player, I think. I was unexpected. I wouldn't expect that. You know, that Shapovalov and Nadal are the two probably of the best players in the world right now. It's one of the most exciting younger guys as well. But I mean, I think the level of entertainment, I think, is different, I think.
That's welcome back to Sports Day. Nick Kyrgios in his post-match presser just talking about your editorial last night, really, Jared. You know, right decision or wrong decision to show those two in the doubles over Rafa versus Shapovalov.
Probably couldn't have worked out any better for Channel 9, given the
amazing.
They probably switched thinking this is two sets to one, two sets to love. This is boring. Let's move over. And then they got the best of both worlds. I mean, it was a bit of a down put. I can accept that argument. And all the listeners, the eight or so that we took their calls, the majority said it was the wrong decision. But in the end, I think Nine got away with it because they came back to the last set.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is that...
Did you have that discussion with your boss about full-time gem next year?
I haven't, no.
Okay.
one thing I would say, Jared, is it really depends on... I don't like just sort of the argument that they're more entertaining to everyone.
You can put Laurel and Hardy on as well.
Yeah, it's sort of whatever floats your boat. Like, I would rather every day of the week watch that first set of Berrettini and Monfils last night than watch Nick and Tanasi in the doubles.
Yep.
That's just me. But a lot of people just want to be entertained and see some amazing shots and some come-ons and some chest pumps, and it's just different.
Yeah, it's set an interesting precedent, Scoop. I know we haven't got enough time, but we will discuss that again at some stage.
More after this, we're going to hear from Darren Cahill. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer. And for Kia, you can check out the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Jared, it is nearly straight sets time for Stefanos Tsitsipas. Yannick Sinner is serving at 1-5 in the third. Tsitsipas winning the first two sets.
Powerful performance by Tsitsipas off the five-setter. And Sinner, well, he'll lose no fans. He's a good young player, but has got a little bit of developing to do. Now, for Bob of Brighton in particular, who hailed me the other day on the walk, who was desperate to get Barbora Stritsova on again.
Yes.
Well, we haven't got time tonight, Bob, but if you tune into our podcast... Barbora will join us from Prague.
And earlier tonight, Jared, because he was calling the Tsitsipas match, the great coach that is Darren Cahill caught up with us.
G'day, boys. How's it going? It might be a bit of noise here. I'm just sitting on Rod Laver Arena at the moment. So sorry about the noise, but yeah, looking forward to a couple of big matches.
Well, tonight you've got Sinner, who can be anything. I think the whole world's now woken up just to how good he is. And what a gutsy performance by Tsitsipas, his last outing. He looked like he was gone for all money at 2-1 down, and you just gutsed it out and turned it into a street fight.
Yeah, I guess Tsitsipas has got a little more experience on his side of the court, and he's not the number four seed for nothing. He's made the semis here before. He got wiped by Nadal a couple of years ago in the semifinals, but he's continuing to put himself into these parts of the tournament, deep into the second week. We know, of course, last year he played that amazing run at the French Open, had Novak two sets love up, and then Novak came back and won that tournament. So a bit more experience on his side of the court, but I love the way Sinner plays. Mm. We've been speaking about him for the last 2 or 3 years. Ricardo Piatti, his coach, about 3 years ago, he grabbed me, and when Sinner was about 17 years of age, he said, "You've got to come out and have a look at this kid I've been coaching for a few years from Italy. He's really good. He was actually a downhill skier as a kid. He's got beautiful balance, and he hits a mean ball." And I went and watched him as a 17-year-old and was thoroughly impressed. And he hasn't let anybody down. And I actually think in the next 2-3 years, you know, with the shape of Nadal and Djokovic and these players maybe moving on from the game, that this kid's a potential number one player in the world.
Yeah, he looks excited. I'm really looking forward to tonight's game. In fact, a question on system. Do you believe it's cyclical? Do you believe it's system-based, that all of a sudden Italy have got Berrettini and Jack Sinner coming through? Are these just mushrooms that pop up in the wild, or is it because of systems they've put in place? In Canada, all of a sudden, you've got three guys that are, all capable, it seems.
Auger, Aliassim, Shapovalov,
Milos, I guess Raonic,
who's been out for a bit.
I mean, you've got some genuine talent there. Do you put it down to the system of the local body, or do you put it down to just a bit of luck?
Actually, super impressed there, Jared, with your pronunciations. For someone that's probably not following tennis 52 weeks of the year, did a great job with those names.
Thank you.
You know what I put it down to? I put it down a little bit to the federation getting the facilities and getting good coaches and paying some decent money to make sure they've got some good coaches in the federations, and they're getting these kids at a younger age.
Yep.
But nothing beats healthy competition. So if you get one or two kids around about the same age that are pretty good, that healthy competition pushes each other and drives each other. And we normally find that you get a group of 4, 5, 6 kids around about the same ages that have a healthy rivalry, and they're extremely competitive amongst the group, and they push each other. And that's what we're seeing in Italy. It's not just him. There's Sonego as well. He's a young kid that's playing pretty well now. Berrettini is just a gun. And they're all good guys. They all help each other. All the coaches work together. They don't just stick with their own player. They help each other and help the team. So yeah, I think it's more that than it is anything else.
Darren, you've coached some of the greats. What's the number one priority? As we hear the announcer coming over the ground. What's the thing that improves a player the quickest from a coaching perspective? Is it fitness?
Same with all sports, to be honest. I think it's hard work, a good attitude, an ability for the coach to get through to the player, the message they're trying to get through. It's a two-way street when it comes to tennis. You can have a great player and you can have a great coach, but if they're not on the same page and they're thinking different things, then it's never going to work. And I think the most important thing for a coach is to coach through the player's eyes and not through the coach's eyes. You know, coaches, 2, 3, 4 years maximum, they kind of move on from the players. And you can't coach all the players the same way. So it takes a little bit of time to understand how the player sees the game of tennis, how you're going to improve them. And then once you earn their trust, you can make some changes to help them improve their tennis. So I don't think it's really any different in any other sports. It just is that tennis is one-on-one. And you're not looking after a group of players.
But do you have to coach a player psychologically? I mean, we've heard Medvedev speak quite openly in the last week or so about the fact that he's hired a psychologist to come on board, whereas other players don't have that.
There's a little bit of that for sure. There's no question that trying to eliminate a lot of the nerves before the players go out and play and sticking to game plans, how they deal with pressure, what type of shots they're going to execute in the big moments, and how they deal with not only losses after a match, but some players can go into a bit of a funk for a week or so after a tough loss, and some players are ready to jump back on the court and keep improving the next day. So the mentality of all the players is really, really different. You treat each player completely differently. I know just my small experience here with Amanda, that even though, you know, playing the same game, you're trying to beat different opponents, I can't coach Amanda the same way that I could coach Simona because they have completely different games. So I just spent a little bit of time trying to understand, you know, what she's thinking in the big moments and what type of game she wants to play. And then you can kind of tailor a game plan around that. But a lot of that has got to do with selling belief to the players. And that's probably, I guess that's what you're going after there.
Yeah.
Probably the most important thing is that in the big moments, the best players in the world, they have real belief in what they can do and what they can execute, and making sure that you get the players to play to their strengths in those moments.
So I just wonder, Jared, I mean, I'm just guessing here, but he talks about belief. Does Nick Kyrgios get to a point where he no longer believes in himself at a point in a big match? Is that the thing, I wonder, that's holding him back? Because it's not talent.
Well, we know that. What's your thoughts there, Darren?
Well, Nick's different, right? He's just cut from a whole different box. And I think that Nick's been telling us for years and years that he's this type of person and this is the type of game that he wants to play, and he wants to play for a bit of entertainment. He doesn't want to take it as seriously as the top players in the world. And all of us in the media, in the game, as coaches, have all been saying, what if? What if Nick did take it a little bit seriously? But that's never been his style. And I actually interviewed Rafa about 2 years ago. They played that great match at Wimbledon about 2 or 3 years ago. And I interviewed Rafa straight afterwards. And I said to him, you know, what do you think of this guy? Because to us, it looks like he's got everything to be a top five player in the world. You know, what if he did put in the work? Do you think he could get there? And Rafa just looked at me with that little Spanish smile that he's got and raised an eyebrow. And he said, Darren, I don't work in ifs. That's not my world. I work in reality. And I just, that's what it is. And that's kind of what it is for me.
Can we move on to the ladies' side of the draw, and in particular your charge, Amanda Anisimova?
Anisimova.
Anisimova.
We're all going to get that
wrong. We are. I know you don't get it wrong, Darren. But I saw her beat Osaka in incredible circumstances, and she just, for the life of me, looked like an A-grade talent ready to come through.
How good was that match?
It was an incredible game. It was probably the best game so far. And then she comes up against Ash Barty, and it was probably a godsend for a coach in potentially you for a long period of time, because it gave her a classic example, an education in where she has to go to get better. She can beat probably 90% of the field playing the way she wants to play. To beat Ash Barty on a regular basis, she's going to have to learn. How do you take her through that journey?
Well, it's a good lesson for her, because Ash is a little bit different to most players in the women's game. She can beat you about 17 different ways. And she's got variation, she's got power, she's got speed, she's got an incredible serve. And that slice backhand, even though she uses the slice backhand to set up her strength, which is her forehand, that slice backhand is a weapon in itself. So to beat Ash, you need some versatility, you need to be able to move well, and you need a lot of patience as well, because you can't go through it. So that was a great lesson for her. She did play Ash about 3 years ago at the French Open and had a bit of a look in that match as well. But, Amanda's, I'm only getting to know her. We spent about 6 weeks together. Even before that, we were swapping videos and trying to help her with her serve a little bit leading into the Australian Open. And, she's had a bit of a rough, I don't know if you know her story, she had a bit of a rough two or 3 years with her father passing away, and her ranking slumped down to about 99 before she started here. So to win the first tournament in Melbourne and then do what she did here in Australia, it just builds her confidence and puts that belief back in her game. And now you go back to work. You never stop, and you keep trying to get better, and she'll physically get better as an athlete, and hopefully we can keep making her a real threat on the tour.
Can I ask you about the depth in the women's game? Because just looking at what we've seen at the present time, it doesn't look anywhere near as strong as it was in 2012 or 2002, when the top 10 were household names. I mean, I just see a real opening with the exception of Osaka and maybe your young charge Amanda. There's very few there that look capable of beating Ash Barty if Ash Barty brings her best. We could be talking about a genuine Grand Slam in 2022.
No, I would take issue with that, Jared. I reckon the women's game is stronger now than it's ever been.
Okay.
We just don't have those absolute champions that are winning week in, week out, like Serena Williams or a Steffi Graf or a Monica Seles. The girls that dominated the tours, right now, there is, right from the first round, you've got to be on your game, because there are so many good players in the game. Iga Swiatek through to the semi-final, she can win any major at any time. Madison Keys, who plays Ash Barty, is very capable of beating Ash. She's a great player. So there is enough players left in the tournament to cause Ash a lot of problems. And as we know at the moment, any one of about 30 players can win this particular tournament. But guys, I've got to go, unfortunately.
No, you do. Thanks, Darren.
It's about to start, so I better get down there, and a pleasure to speak to you guys at any time.
The amazing Darren Cahill there joining us in the middle of his work, really. It's interesting, Jared, because I'm with you and what you're trying to say about the depth of talent. I think what Darren's answer was, you're probably arguing the same thing in that he believes that the consistency over maybe the women's game. Now, as you said at the top of the show, Jared, I mean, we went through that. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Oh, as I said last night, I reckon the next 4 or 5 years are a huge window for Ash.
Oh, I agree with you, Scoop. But and when you said it,
it's never easy winning slams, no matter who you're playing, right?
I did the work and came up with the top 10, and I accept exactly what Darren's saying. I mean, anybody can beat anybody on a given day.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt the best 50 players in the world are better than the best 50 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the top 5, 6, or 7,
yeah,
I just look like to me like there's the Ash Barty, Naomi Osaka, and daylight.
And distance, yep.
And yet you go back to 20 years ago, Williams, Capriati, Clijsters, Hennen, Maresmo, Salas, Hunter-Kova, Docker, Kingis.
Yeah, huge.
Massive names. Yeah,
any of those could have won a slam at any stage. And, you know, we're starting this in 22. We put our hand up when I'm putting my hand up for last night. Yeah. Ash Barty, Jess Pegula really let me down. I said she'd take a set. She took 2 games.
Mm.
More sports after this.
It's time for a country racing update. The country is back racing strong again. Support local communities and visit countryracing.com.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Country racing is back up and going, Jared.
Oh, big day today.
I was at the Healesville races a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Geez, it's good fun, the picnic races.
Well, there's a big one on today. The Balnarring and Hanging Rock Cups. Thousands of people there to tell us all about it. Maggie Payne joins us again. Welcome, Maggie.
Yeah, g'day guys. And I heard you had a good time, Sam. I actually just got out of the Balnarring Beach, so I had a perfect day at the races and just pulled off.
Any moisture in the air?
Not at the races. That's why we had to go down to the beach.
Right.
We didn't get too many winners up either. So,
oh, okay.
But didn't dampen our spirits. There was plenty of people there under the shades of the tree, and we had a great day.
The crowd, how many turned up today?
I reckon they were probably down, but a few thousand at least, and considering it's a Wednesday, I think they did very well and the club are very happy. So lots of happy people and lots of families out and about celebrating their Australia Day.
And what do we got on this weekend? Last weekend of the summer of country racing?
Yep. It keeps on rolling this weekend at least with free activities. So Saturday we head to the Healesville picnic. So for anyone wanting their picnic fix, and then Sunday we've got the races up at Donald and Mafra Cup Day over in Sale. So another busy weekend of country racing. So if you're wanting to, I guess, finish the holidays off right, head to the country races this weekend.
Any tips for us, Maggie?
You don't drink as much as you did at the races, Scoop.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, well, we'll have to save those stories for off-air.
Oh, hello, some
Sam.
Stories.
Can't wait to hear how they were.
Thanks, Maggie.
There's always stories on Bucks parties. See you, Sam.
Enjoy
the weekend.
Well, it's all coming out now.
You have been very mean to me this week, on
No, I've just been inquisitive.
You've been very mean.
You're captain of the twos, you've got it.
That's mean in itself. That's right, not there. That's
you're only a boy. You're only a boy. You're on the way up.
I'm 30.
That's okay. You're only a young. I mean, as far as age is concerned in TV, you're only there. Peter Hitchin is still going. He's 73.
Hey, can I ask you a question about the tennis? So the roof got closed halfway through the Tsitsipas.
Yeah, about 20 minutes after the rain turned up. That has been an ongoing beef.
Are we still doing this? Like,
would appear so.
We knew that storm was coming for a week.
You're not allowed to shut it until the place gets wet.
We could have got until sort of like halfway through the day, and then someone looks at the radar and says, hey, everywhere north 200K and everywhere south 100K is going to get wet.
Yes.
Should we just stop and close the roof?
Press the button 5 minutes before, if it hits Tullamarine, someone to call.
I guess their argument is, yeah.
What's the argument?
Well, I guess it's that there would be players. Like, Federer hated playing under the roof, remember? He's like, it's an outdoor sport. Yeah. I want a bit of breeze.
I accept all that.
Guys hit it harder than me. I don't want to change the conditions.
I accept all of that. But we are talking, shut the thing 5 minutes before the rain comes. And we've got those technologies now. So we don't have to spend 20 minutes with ball kids getting bad backs, wiping the place up and having a 20-minute delay. Doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. It hasn't for a long time.
Yeah, but in order to do that, you would have to preemptively close the roof in between matches, right?
No. You can close it midway through a match.
Yeah, but then you're getting the same break anyway for the roof closing versus the roof closing because it's wet.
Well, you can't play tennis while the roof closes.
No, I don't think you can.
Why?
Well, the same reason you can't play footy while the Marvel roof closes. It's OH&S.
Health and safety. If that's the case, preempt it.
Jared, the EPA will be all over it. They're the ones turning the music off at 10 o'clock at the tennis. That happened again last night, by the way, on Australia Day. Music off 10 o'clock.
That seems a little bit over the top. Overzealous.
Am I making too much of this?
No, overzealous. Particularly if there was somebody living within 300 metres, I would be fully supported, but clearly well, they're not.
The governor might.
Now, Rafa has fired back at Shapovalov. He said he was a bit emotional.
So this is over, if you're just listening, Shapovalov had a crack saying it's corrupt that the umpires and officials don't call him more for time violations.
Everybody's favouring Rafa.
Yep.
And Rafa said he's obviously emotional. He played a great match for a long time, and of course it is tough to accept to lose a match like this. I felt destroyed, and obviously he felt like that. I wish him all the best. He's young, and everybody makes mistakes in our careers.
How good. That's a nice old-fashioned backhander from Rafa, right, isn't it? It's good on you, young man.
Yeah.
You're still coming through. And by the way, you got beaten. Bad luck.
You had a shocker. Stop complaining.
That's nice, isn't it?
I made a mistake.
Rafa's the king at that. Rafa and Roger are the best in the last 15 years, almost in world sport, Jared, for clipping people with a smile on their faces. Don't you reckon?
Probably Scoop. I hadn't considered it like that, but
there's a few of those in footy.
Oh, there's probably...
Like the Scott brothers were a bit more direct, but some people do it with a smile. Horse is great at that.
Yes, indeed.
Clarko has become good at it.
Who's going to win tonight, Scoop?
Medvedev in straight for me over Auger Aliassim.
Straight again. Okay, I'll stick with you this time.
Rafa, does he get through?
No.
Oh, Berrettini gets him.
Rafa's been the favourite, but I'm going to jump on the Italian wagon.
You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for the great people from Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Thanks for tuning in. Big hour coming up. Jared Healy and Sam McClure, and we're going to start right at the top, Jared.
Well,
we are welcoming
Bob
back.
From Brighton has been calling for this for 7 days. Stopped me twice on the walk.
What's happened?
And said, are you getting Barbora on?
Is she back?
She is back from Prague, I believe.
This is unbelievable. Didn't she just have baby Vincent?
Baby Vincent has joined us. I'm sure he's watching the computer and listening to this interview as we bring Barbora, one of the elite stars of the competition and our show last year.
31 doubles titles, 2 singles titles. She won a bronze medal in the 2016 Olympics. She's done it all.
Finally, we've got her because I was under threat of murder if I had not got you on from Bob from Brighton. I've got to say, Barbora, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you. I'm back, yes. Finally. It has been difficult to manage the time to with the baby to catch up with you guys, but we finally did.
And how's Vincent's forehand and backhand going?
Well, he doesn't know where his arms are, so not sure yet if it's going to be lefty or righty, but forehand will be good.
Barbora, as someone that's been there and done it, would you like Vincent to play tennis or would you like to him for him to stay as far away from it as possible?
No, I would like to. I would like him to play somehow to at least know how to hit the ball over the net. But I would like him to do more sports, not just only tennis. It's if he chooses tennis, good. But I will not push him to kind of.
What are the other options you've got in mind for Vincent? Bit of a downhill ski.
I would like him. Yeah. Well, I would like judo.
Oh, judo. Hello.
Yeah, and I would like maybe skiing.
Yeah.
I don't know. He will choose, but I want him to do sport.
I wonder, Jared, if...
Not just sitting in and watching computer, like right now.
Is skiing in Prague kind of like footy here? Like everyone just kind of has to do it?
Barbora, which is the most popular sport in your town?
Well, tennis is number one, but we have also hockey and football. But I think maybe hockey is over the tennis. But tennis is getting very, very popular because we have good players and we have good players already long time. So, yeah, we have a lot of courts inside and it's getting bigger and bigger.
Barbora, can I ask you about the depth of the women's game right now? Do you think it's... Now that you've retired and a couple of others, do you think it's just lost a little bit of punch at the top end?
Yes, a little bit. It does. Well, to be honest, I'm watching a lot of tennis with Vincent in the morning because he doesn't sleep during the night. So we are watching a lot of matches, not only women, but men's as well. But yeah, it has, yeah, it lost a little bit. I mean, Naomi is kind of so-so right now. And yeah, I don't know. It's missing the top player like we had, like Serena or Maria or I don't know, but maybe it's also good for the fans that is changing every time and every tournament there is a different champion. But I'm missing a little bit the champion we used to have, only like these three players. So it doesn't have it right now.
In 2002.
But it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's
no, it's
okay.
Great. It's We're still enjoying it, particularly with Ash Barty doing so well. But in 2002, the top 10 were Serena, Venus, Jennifer Capriati, Kim Clijsters, Aussie Kim, Justine Henin. She used to be called Justine Henin, and then it became Henin Ardenne, and then Henin. Emily Maresmo, Monica Seles, Daniela Hunter-Kova, Yelena Dokic, and Martina Hingis. I mean, they are all household names.
Yeah, but you should not complain. You have number one in the world, Ash Barty, and she's doing pretty good. I mean, she's in fire during the tournament. She didn't lost any, like, I mean, five games, no, you know, so it's great.
Do you see her anyway? Do you think she can win the Grand Slam this year? I mean, the lot, the four. Because there seems to be, between her, Naomi, there seems to be daylight to the rest of the field.
You mean your Austrian Open or
no? I mean
Grand
the
Slam
lot,
all four.
Oh, all four. Oh, that's I don't know. I mean, she has the game for it. Definitely, I think she's in a great shape, and also in mentally, she seems so stable and so strong. Like she's enjoying herself, even though she must be under so much pressure now in Melbourne. But I, when you look at her game and look at her, I mean, attitude is great. So definitely she has a huge chance to win this one, but I'm not sure how it's going to go. You know, some injuries can come, hopefully not, but it can change any
injuries,
minute.
Injuries, you can have a flat day, you can have a bad night, you can wake up and you can have a spasm in the back. I mean, we all understand now everything's got to go right. That's why it's so incredible in history. But right now, she looks very comfortable.
Hey, Barbara, what did you and young Vincent think as you were watching Novak Djokovic? And I think there was a Czech player as well there that were deported from Australia.
Well, I did two interviews before Australia about Novak, and I got such a big bad comments on it. Oh. But I am standing behind my opinion. It's that I don't agree that that you have to push someone to be vaccinated or not. It's just like for me about if you go to a different country, it's not your country, and you are you have to follow the rules of the country. And if you don't, then don't go. If you don't agree with the vaccination or to be vaccinated, don't go and don't play it, and don't ask for any permission just because you are who you are. It's not about now if you are Novak Djokovic or somebody else. There are people who are dying for this disease, and it's crazy. So this is my opinion, and I think it was so much talked about that they forgot about the Austrian Open, about the tennis. So this is what I said, and I got so
Vincent
many
agrees.
Punched.
You got a lot of negative feedback, but I mean, you're always going to get negative feedback, but sometimes there's a vocal minority because a lot of people in Australia would have thought about
it. I don't know how do you see it, because for me, you have been for such a long time in the lockdown, and then suddenly there is a players who are asking for permission to not be vaccinated and play in your country, even though there are athletes who are coming from let's say Olympic Games. They won Australian people and they won medal, and they had to be 14 days in a hotel.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy for me. So this is. I'm standing behind my opinion.
Well, I think you should stand strong, Barbara, despite the criticism. I think it's as plain as you've enunciated it. I find it difficult that Tennis Australia couldn't see that particular line of thinking, but they didn't. They tried to work a system to get him in, and they unfortunately got themselves in a big mess and the country in a big mess.
Yeah, it was a big mess. And then the politics were in it. And it was, yeah, maybe bad communication between everybody. I'm not sure.
Hey, Barbora, just but last one from me. We've had a lot of players. Matteo Berrettini was actually the latest last night to complain about the Aussie crowds and basically, you know, say that some of them aren't tennis fans and
just bogans.
They are bogans that yell out stupid stuff at the wrong time. I mean, I see where he's coming from, to be honest, that I'm an Aussie as well. Did you ever think that? Like, how different is the Aussie crowd to other Grand Slams?
It's very different, but you have to also see that he is Italian and he played against French guy, and French fans are crazy and sometimes they don't know how to behave. You can hear now Vincent.
Vincent agrees with that one too. He doesn't like French fans.
But I love Australian fans because they are very special. They are unique. They are so different compared to other countries. I don't know why he complained about it. He when you are in Italy and you're playing against Matteo in Rome, let's say, you cannot handle it. It's crazy. They behave like crazy. So I'm not sure why he complained about yesterday, because I saw it and it wasn't that bad.
How did you rate the English crowd?
Sorry?
How did you rate the English crowd at Wimbledon?
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear them.
No good.
No, I mean, they are great, but they are so, they following so much the rules, you know, they are sitting, it's very quiet, you know, that you don't hear anybody
eating strawberries, Barbora. Too busy eating their strawberries.
Yeah, eating strawberries and cream and champagne, so maybe that's why they cannot scream.
Isn't that what you guys have at Brighton, Jared? Strawberries and cream and champagne? What happens in Brighton?
Only for breakfast.
Barbora, we love having you on. It's great to catch up again. Give our best to Vincent. And
thank you so much, guys.
We'll chat to you soon.
Yes, see you. And be safe. Bye.
We will be. Barbora Stritzova. How good is it to have her back?
She's good. She's good. And she should stand by her rationale and her thinking on the COVID, the no-vax scenario.
Well, she thumbed it up pretty well.
Exactly,
she did. You can be the person that you want to be, but as soon as you come into someone else's country, the rules change.
Spot on.
More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson Homes. It's Jono time, Jared.
Indeed it is, Jono. Welcome to you. And it's another exciting night coming up with Sissipas just working his way through against the young gun. But we've got tonight Medvedev against Scoops Canadian.
Auger Aliassime.
Has anybody pronounced it better than Scoop throughout the journey?
I think Scoop gets a chocolat.
He's quick. Good. He's on fire today. Jono, before we go, we started the night just discussing the depth of the women's draw. Where are you on this particular...
versus, say, you know, 20 years ago, Jared.
Yeah, and I'll just for the sake of it, I'll read you out 2002, top 10. Williams, Capriati, Clijsters, Hennen, Maresmo, Salas, Hunter-Kova, Dokic and Hingis. 2012, Williams, Wozniacki, Clijsters, Dementieva, Sharapova, Yankovic, Stoza, Williams, Zvonareva and Schiavone. 2022, you've got Barty, Sabalenka, Muguruza,
Krejcikova,
Pliskova, yep. Badoza, Kantave, Sakkari, Swiatek, and Jabeur.
Yeah, well, look, it does say a lot, just that the heavyweight depth that was around with those first couple of lists you read out, which were also became very big global names too. Mm. And I think what we have now is a few that are sort of showing signs here and there. Let's say today, Swiatek, she's won a French Open and now she's in the semis, but she sort of hasn't been the week in, week out dominating figure. And that's what's probably left the whole year open for Ash Barty this year. I mean, look, you know, he probably could be thinking it as well, but this is potentially Grand Slam year for Ash Barty, not just talking Australian Open, because the depth of the women isn't quite the same as it was in those years, where actually there was a lot of global figures then too. That, you know, you had even Li Na, you know, think what she did for tennis in China, and you had Maria Sharapova, who was just like that was big global names, and there was a bunch of them. And so here it's been Ash and the girls like Muguruza, you said, who's well entrenched in top 10, and she's actually won a couple of slams, but there's not the day-in, day-out sort of rivalries that we're seeing.
So at the top of the program, did a small editorial on this, and my view was that only injury, Osaka, and Barty herself can beat Ash Barty in 2022 and stands between her and a Grand Slam. So you're with me. You're on that same thread, Jono. I like this.
Look, as we know with a slam, a heck of a lot has to go right.
Yeah.
But when I just feel like, look, she's coming. Let's say she wins here and it's her first Australian Open. Then she goes into two majors that she's won. She's won Roland Garros and she's won Wimbledon. And then the final slam on hard courts at Flushing Meadow. And I think, look, she just paces her year so well and she can peak for the big ones and she's not playing unnecessarily. She's never one to sort of chase the appearance money week in, week out to sort of, you know, cash in, if you like. She's just going to, and she's got a good team around her that will plot every moment. And I think, yeah, that at this stage, as we say, there's a lot can go wrong, but she's just cherry ripe for all of these.
In the men's, Jono, I know that Medvedev's been, you know, quote-unquote unstoppable, and Jared and I have been talking about how comfortable he's looked. But I actually reckon there's an argument that all three that are currently in it against him, in Tsitsipas, Berrettini, and Nadal, can beat him on their day.
Yeah, Sam, I think you can mount that argument for sure. The one thing I thought, look, I just Medvedev came in probably as favoured. I know I didn't pick him. I thought Zverev might have been the one that
would get it done. Don't forget that. We have erased that from the table.
It's a low point.
I get ahead of it. But then the one thing I thought on Medvedev was I saw him get a treatment on his back in his match against Creasy, and I just think of the workload over the next couple of days played tonight. This will be a brutal contest for him against Felix, and then it'd be the winner of obviously then plays winner of Tsitsipas Sinner, and then I'm thinking Rafa gets through. Rafa is sitting there with two days break now after that you know massive struggle yesterday, and I think the schedule's sort of playing a little bit against Medvedev, so that's all that's sort of just putting a doubt in my mind at the moment. And for Rafa, boy, he's benefiting from this first year of where the men's semis haven't been split, and so he's having those 2 days off, and these guys have got to play tonight and then only 1 day off. It's just, it all counts when you get to the last couple of rounds.
Particularly after the absolute gunfight that Tsitsipas had against the big American only two nights ago.
And Taylor Fritz
took him to the cleaners early, had to fight back, exhausted a lot of energy. And, yep. You know, he got the job done against Sinner, and it was a comfortable win, but it starts to take hold if you're doing these five setters.
That's right. And look, for Tsitsipas, he came in here.
Unders.
He'd had elbows, some sort of surgery back in November, and was very, ordinary in the beginning coming in those first couple of matches in the ATP Cup, which, of course, is just setting the stage for the Australian Open, but I didn't sort of think he'd be as battle hardened as he's looked. But you know, as you say, it's the seven matches. It's the thing, and when you get down to the end, sometimes a little bit of luck, schedule wise, etc., has got to play out. And you know, I think Rafa's going to be the beneficiary of that.
So overall, your thoughts on Sinner? What year will he win his first slam?
Oh gee, in the next 18 months, I still think he's actually, just solid enough, I think, good on all. I haven't seen enough of what he would be like on grass, but I imagine just his ball striking and his awareness and his movement would play well under the grass.
Great he hands at the net.
Hasn't he? Yeah, he can close out so well once he gets to the net. You know, he's just no apparent weaknesses and such a young guy, but so sort of calm in himself and self-assured. It's just... he's got a massive future, and it'll come pretty soon.
Tell me why you think Italy all of a sudden are producing so many good players and Canada are producing so many good players. I had this discussion with Darren Carl earlier in the piece.
Well, one thing I'll say on Italy, they've got a massive tournament schedule now. It's always been... Italy got some great tennis clubs who have had history of tournaments at different levels over a long period of time, but I think the Federation harnessed it. The Federation's been making good money out of the Rome Masters event. They've got a tennis channel there in Italy, and so for the clubs to step up, and I think there's 17 or 18 challenges in the men's. You know, they've got Rome as a real focal point. They've got other sort of tour level events. I think it's just the environment you can play in there, the tournaments on offer. You know, you don't have to travel week in, week out, you know, to Asia and those parts. So I think it's a pretty simple formula. I think competition provision is a pretty simple formula, Jared, no matter what country you're in.
No, I accept that. But ultimately, if you're practicing poor technique, you can have as many tournaments as you like. So, yep. Which is why I think you need a great head coach. You need a coach that's coaching the coaches.
Yeah, I'd add that part. And the one bit we did miss when you mentioned technique is obviously most of these tournaments, the clubs are on clay. And that's the best surface to be building your game on. You know, you can't get away with weaknesses on clay. And then in the winter, they do get the indoors as well. So they've sort of, you know, a little bit of like the best of all worlds. And it all comes together. And I think the other bit you always get then, remember with the Swedes when it was Borg and then it was a, you know, float on with Willander, Nystrom, Edberg. You get that, you know, one Italian doing well, so the others are competing. The funny one is Fognini was sort of holding the flag for a little while now, but he's just one of many that are coming up.
Jono, any more inspired tips for you for the last few days, or are we sticking with the Ash Barty tip, Jared, that's got the Johnson truck backed up to it?
Ash Barty I'm just sticking with because I just... It's the bank of Ashley, but I think the men's.
Give me your two finalists. Semi-finals.
Yeah, I'll give you the Rafa and Medvedev for the final.
Okay,
and
she's safe.
I'll still stay with Medvedev.
Staying with Medvedev, he's jumped straight onto the Medvedev bandwagon. I thought you might have taken a little punt on Berrettini, but you reckon that Rafa will get Berrettini?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Thanks, Jono. Talk tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
That's going to be the most interesting of all the semis, I reckon, men's and women's. I think Berrettini-Nadal is going to be the most interesting one.
Is Jono still there by any chance? He's disappeared. We didn't ask him.
What?
Whether the umpires are favouring Nadal.
Oh, yes. We do have a little bit of audio of Denis Shapovalov talking yesterday about the umpiring with Rafa.
It's unfair, you know, how much Rafa's getting away with. I mean, I'm completely ready to play, and the clock is ticking, 3, 2, 1, you know, it's clicking towards zero. And I'm looking at the ump, and you know, I'm going to speak up and say something. I mean, I've been ready to play for a minute and a half. And he tells me that that he's not going to give him a code violation because I'm not ready to play, you know. And to me, it's a big joke, you know, if somebody says that.
Really interesting. That's his press conference afterwards. I mean, he also had a crack at the chair umpire during.
Yeah.
Wonder if he gets fined for that.
There are a couple of questions that we have not posed to Peter Johnson. We tried to get him back on the line, but he hasn't picked up the phone, but put that down for tomorrow. Mm. And also, something I've got to get off my chest, another one. Is there a rule that you wear the mask in centre court? Because if there is...
Yes. Then you've got to wear it everywhere, not just centre court.
Then...
got to wear it outside.
Who played last night?
Berrettini played last night. And he
Gael Monfils Camp didn't even pretend to have a mask on.
Yeah, but no one's wearing them, Jared.
Well, then, surely the tournament should be saying, put your masks on, folks.
They are. I mean, people are walking around. There were people there last night.
Are there mask police? We're going to find kids at school $100.
Genuinely, there were mask police last night coming down the aisles.
Well, they're not
checking on people.
Well, how can they be?
Well, they're not going all the way down to the player box.
Well, surely the player's box should be the first people setting the example.
Hmm.
I mean, half the crowd didn't have their masks on last night.
We've gone from 50% to 65%, by the way, because apparently that's the safe thing to do health-wise.
Have we gone to 65%, have we?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it's a win.
We're 100% across the road at Amy.
That's right.
Goodness gracious. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson Homes. There's been obviously a lot of things impacting the AFLW at the moment, Jared. One of them being COVID, which is impacting sports everywhere in the world. A lot of women's players have gone down in the AFLW. A lot of those have been Brisbane players, but they still yesterday had a really impressive win over the Carlton Footy Club, 9-9-63 to 4-4-28. To talk that and all things footy, is their coach, the great Craig Starcevic.
And he joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Craig.
G'day, guys.
And a good win, plenty of goals, which will keep Wolsey happy. I think Wolsey's a great Carlton man, so he would not be happy with the result. But he would have been thrilled, given that he coached the Brisbane Bears, to see you kick 9-9.
At Carrara, where Wolsey spent a lot of time.
Indeed, yes. So the goals are starting to come in the AFLW.
Oh, yeah. I mean, geez, we only kicked one in the first week, and that was only 2 weeks ago, so...
Let me say, they're starting to come intermittently.
Intermittently, yeah, inconsistently. No, they are. The scoring has gone up year on year dramatically, actually. So, I think it's the amount of time that you have with the group, skill-wise, fitness-wise. I also think the venues play a bit of a part as well. I found last night on a very still night in a stadium at Metricon, the standard of footy was actually very, very high. The ball moved really quickly. We were, you know, a couple of goals up most of the night, but you never really felt like you were home. The style of footy is better in those types of venues, I think.
Jared, are you going to ask this question that's been playing on your mind for
I was going to wait until later.
Weeks? Okay, I'll throw a few in there. Craig, that the loss of Kate Lutkins with the knee injury in round one, I just wanted to ask you, and Jared's going to touch on your background as in high performance later, but the run of ACLs, obviously Kate, a huge loss, but what do you put it down to in the last, not just year, it must be said, in AFLW?
I don't know is the short answer, but I'm suspicious about a couple of things.
Okay.
So rather than actually say that's the reason, which no one can, to be honest.
What are you suspicious of, Craig?
When you see the change of direction without body contact, you're always suspicious about how grippy the ground is. So I know there's been a lot of stuff done with ground hardness and the, I don't know what the measure is for torsion or twisting or how grippy it is on your foot, on your footwear, but all that stuff used to get measured a lot. I presume it still does. I don't know, to be honest, because I'm not in that space anymore, but it certainly used to get measured a lot back in the day. So I don't know. I'm just suspicious about summertime, firm grounds, really sort of matted grass growth that gives you no margin for error in terms of twisting and turning. It just it grips your boot and then you're in trouble.
I think the Eagles, did they go through that patch with the Fremantle Dockers? They were concerned that I think it was the couch grass that was on the old Subiaco was fundamental played a part in a few of their ACLs.
That was the research that was done, but that's sort of 20 years old now. Yeah. I don't know where they're at now in terms of that type of research.
Whilst we're on the high performance, I've got to get this off my chest. Scoops opened up the door. the benefit or lack thereof of players, and I see them all the time down in the bay.
Oh, here we go. It's the beach.
It's the beach recovery session where players walk into their mid thighs and just stand around. Now, I could sort of understand there may be a slight degree of rehab benefit if the water was 10 degrees, which it is in the middle of winter. But when it's 20 degrees, and I've seen this in the last 2 weeks, I get the only thing they're going to accrue from that is sunburn.
What would you prefer, Jared?
Well, I prefer swimming. Do an active rehab.
I'm with you on that one, actually. So, yeah, like if you're going to get in cold water, get in and do some get some movement happening.
But even getting into warm water, you might as well have a bath. You might as well go and have a shower. It could have, would have not 1% of benefit at all, and yet we seem to be doing it because someone else is doing it.
But, Craig, during the Lions winning the three flags, wasn't the thing you bring the wheelie bins in of ice? And you just sit there? There's not much movement happening there.
But at least that's cold water. Mm. At least that's ice.
Mm. Mm. But that still happens.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, research-wise, I don't know where it's at right now with all of that. There used to be contrast.
Yep.
Plunging as well, hot and cold plunges. So that seemed to... And that's still in vogue a little bit. I don't know. I don't know who's got the concrete science behind all of this to say that is the best way to recover. Although... the bottom line is get a good night's sleep. That's the best way of recovering.
Stay off the alcohol. It's probably the most thing that helps you the most. Your own team, you've had the ultimate success. We spoke to you after your premierships. Where are you at the present time?
We obviously had a bit of a shaky start the first round. Yep. I've never been in a game of footy before when the centre-half back and centre-half forward go down within half an hour of each other. So that was tricky to negotiate. Plus then around that time, we had our first case of COVID in the group as well on our travel to Adelaide. So that really shook things up. And I don't know what's better, to be honest, whether you have four or five go down in dribs and drabs or whether you have all 14 go down like we did in one big clump. So I don't know. These are all things I think the men's comp are probably going to have to deal with at some point in the next month or two. But, yeah, so fortunately, even last night, of that 14, I think we got sort of 10 back training and maybe half of those were barely affected and the other half are still struggling a bit. So, it was just nice to be able to get out and run around and compete really well and play at game intensity and put on a decent show.
It was reported today the AFL considering having train on squads, which is probably the logical extension. We've been expecting them to say something official for a few weeks now. How do you think that can work and how do you think it should work?
With the men's competition?
Yep.
Yeah. I know with us, we've got 30 on our list and we've got a train on squad of 10. And it was very real that we might have needed a couple of them last night. Mm. So, yeah, we definitely got to the point where we were right on the edge of 21 fit and healthy players. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's I don't know. The fact that the men's season doesn't start until March might mean that you'll get, people come through and get a little bit of COVID in the next couple of months and recover and be okay. But yeah. I don't know. It's too difficult to predict, but I think there'll have to be some sort of safety net there for teams, I would have thought, just in case they get too low.
And how are you going with the pursuit of a full-time professional code? Where do you see that journey towards actually happening?
I'd love it to happen tomorrow, Jared, to be honest. I don't. The finance part of it is the tricky part. So, and it's all linked to the CBA and the media rounds and all that sort of stuff. So, the media rights. So, yeah, that part of it, I'd like to see happen tomorrow. All I can think about is back around 97, 98, and you would remember when, I think it was Terry Wallace actually got the Bulldogs to start training mid-morning instead of late afternoon like the rest of us did, and then every other club in the competition followed suit. So there was no actual plan back in the late 90s for the men's comp to suddenly go full-time professional.
Yeah.
It just sort of happened organically. So all I can think of is that cohort of players in the late 90s, what were their professional standards and training ethics like compared to the group that we've got now in AFLW? And I'm thinking they're about the same, and possibly our girls are actually more committed as a collective, I'm saying. So I'm thinking going back to those days, if that's the measure for readiness for professionalism, then I think we're in a pretty good spot.
It's a real challenge. I'm not sure what the right answer is, but I think one of the issues that needs to be addressed, Craig, is if we make the competition full-time, and let's say that happened tomorrow or for next year, at what level of finance would it need to get before girls could actually say, well, I've got to earn a living as well. I've got to have a career somewhere else. If they can't make, a significant income, well, then maybe until we get to that point where it's significant, then even if we could get them $50,000 each or $35,000 each, it's too early.
Yeah, and at the moment, that only applies to at best 4 to 6 in your team, at the very best. So, you're right. We do need to reach that threshold at some point. But again, these were all the conversations that were going on in the men's comp back in the late 90s. Who was on decent enough point back then to actually make football their full-time profession. So they're exactly the same conversations that we were having back, 20, 30 years ago.
And you're full-time, Craig?
I am at the moment, but I'm only 6 months. Right. So that's my setup at the moment, just for the AFLW season.
Would you like 12 months? Would you like a 12-month career either in AFL men's comp or AFLW?
Oh, AFLW, definitely. Yeah, that would be ideal, and that's, you know, where it'll evolve to, I guess, when we've got the players more regularly throughout the whole year. But that's certainly not the driving force behind what I'm talking about.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
I'm definitely talking about the players' welfare here.
Thanks so much for coming on, Craig. Good luck for the rest of the year, whatever challenges that are thrown up at you.
Thanks, boys. Good on you. Thanks for having us.
Craig Starcevic, he's star with the Pies, and he's been just one of the great coaches in the AFLW after playing such a significant part in Lee Matthews and the three-peat up there in Brisbane.
Are you happy that you got that off your chest? Are you agree with you?
Well, I'm glad I've got one ticked off on the box.
Some support.
Got some support there.
More sports.
That's
day.
Along with Dr. Bruce.
More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. Jared, the Traralgon Cup in the Greyhound section is a two-week event. We had the heats last week. We've got the main event tonight. It's already actually started, but we're building up to the big one. David Gill is a trainer of Hilltop Jonah and Ferdinand Boy, who's been good enough to join us as he gets into Traralgon. G'day, David.
Yeah, hi, Sam. Hi, Jared.
Well, it's a perfect night for it tonight. Obviously, the meet's underway, but you're getting pretty excited for the main event.
Yeah, it is exciting to have two dogs. Bred both of them as well, and my wife owns both of them.
Yeah.
So we've got no real preference. But yeah, they both go good, both pretty quick early, and they both went super last week. So we're just hoping they can begin tonight because it's going to be on. There's eight very fast dogs.
Well, we've been interested in this. We've been researching this over the last couple of weeks in the build-up, Scoob and I, to the Traralgon Cup. We're actually fascinated in what a trainer can do to make a dog go faster. Given that you can't put them in the weights room, what's your strategy?
no strategy, Jared. It's to make them go faster. Look, they're born... There can be half a second between a really fast one and a slow one, half a second.
Yeah.
Which is eight lengths, you know. So, but no, we just got to manage, like a lot of the trainers would, you've got to manage them from the heat. Know when to back off, give them their recovery after the race, and then step them up, you know, gradually step their work up, and then start backing off again as we approach the final, and just managing it right, feeding the same, don't alter anything, and you know, so that's the strategy, is to keep it the same, but manage it right. You've got to get it right because we're against you know, six other very good trainers and dogs, so. We've just got to make sure everything's done right.
So, David, which one of your dogs you think is the better chance, Jonah or Ferdinand?
Oh, probably Jonah because of the box draw. He's very, very reliable, very quick out.
Okay.
And he's not as classy as the other guy. He's probably three lengths slower. And the other guy's been able to win on the big stage quite often. But he has got box five, and there's a couple out wide. The Sydney Grey, the New South Wales Greyhound, Typhoon Sammy's is quick a dog you'll get in Australia over that first 400 metres as well. So it's going to be on. It's like having eight Carl Lewis's lined up in the box or something at the Olympics.
Good on you, David. Good luck tonight, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys, for having us on.
David Gill there, trainer of Hilltop Jonah and Ferdinand Boy.
It's my wife.
Yep. Lovely.
There's only one way you can feed the dog, and that is it has to have chicken.
Yep.
Chicken and a little bit of the brown stuff.
Yeah,
always chicken.
A little bit of kibble.
Bit of kibble.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to have
a little bit of chicken.
Not grain fed chicken. What is it?
White chicken.
Oh, no, you're absolutely white, but I reckon we keep the chicken shop in business.
Do you?
Oh.
They are, what breeds your dog again?
Inga Marie is a Cocker Spaniel, half Cocker, half Golden Retriever.
How good are dogs?
Great dogs.
They're just...
Oh, Inga Marie. And one of the best tennis players of all time, Inga.
Does Inga come and welcome you when you get when you walk in the front door?
Oh, yeah. No, she's very keen. She wants a game of tennis. She gets right. She gets a game of tennis each and every time
Inga
you walk in.
Does Inga get up
in.
On the couch?
Yep.
Okay. And does that annoy Lisa?
No.
Okay. Does she have her own little blanket or is she just straight on the couch?
Straight on the couch, but she's got her own chair too.
Sounds like Inga might run the show down in Brighton.
Sounds like it.
Quick New Farm weather update. Humid again and 34 tomorrow. Shower or two expected and a possible storm.
Same as today, same as tomorrow.
Well, I've got to say, it was for the forecast of storms,
yeah,
very sunny storm.
They're coming. They're coming, yeah. I think they're coming later.
Righto. Good stuff, Jared. I'm going home to watch the tennis. You?
Me too.
We'll be texting
who we got on tonight?
Night,
who we got on tonight?
Medvedev's tonight.
Oh, we've got Medvedev playing.
Medvedev is playing.
Let me have a look at the screen here.
The fact that I don't know is really bad.
The Canadian.
Oh, Auger Aliassime. Cut this, please, Matt. Medvedev is playing the young Canadian. I reckon he's seeded 9, Felix Auger Aliassime.
I love the way you pronounce that, Scoop.
And Medvedev will beat him in straight.
Straight sets? I haven't seen this kid, so I'm looking forward to having
a look. He's a gun.
But so I've got no...
Medvedev's in a different zone.
Jono thinks he's going to win majors.
Poor, big call.
So does that mean he gets a set off him? He looked a bit flat to me, Medvedev, last time out.
Yeah. No, I think Medvedev in straight. Although I did say Ash in 3 last night, so I'm not going well. See you tomorrow, folks.